Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the LA Steel Show. I'm Lila.
And Leo.
And we're here tonight to bring you some news. Usually we bring you an interview, but last night we were preempted by election news, and so we don't have a recorded interview, so we're going to be reading a lot of news.
Right. That's what we're going to do tonight. So to start off, Republicans seize control as millions of U.S. voters turn their backs on Obama.
The Republican Party delivered a stinging blow to President Barack Obama last night, capturing the U.S. House of Representatives in a stunning midterm election victory. The party also narrowed the Democratic majority in the Senate, but fell short of winning overall control. The Republican gains usher in an era of divided government for the United States.
We're going to see one hell of a gridlock for the next 2 years.
So nothing will happen.
No, I think this is by the U.S. Mail Online, by the way, British press.
The Republican Party delivers things.
Mr. Obama will have to deal with more conservative Congress, which will include members of the anti-establishment Tea Party movement. And, excuse me.
The results reflected America's frustration with a weak U.S. economy and disillusionment with Mr. Obama, who was swept into the office 2 years ago in a message of hope and change. Republican John Boehner, destined to replace Nancy Pelosi as House Speaker, called the results a repudiation of Washington, a repudiation of big government, a repudiation of politicians who refused to listen to the people.
What a blowhard this guy is, though.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy is such a piece of work.
He was the guy that said, don't vote for anything.
Yeah. And you know, he did his whole campaign, and the Republican Party is big business. I mean, it's just a piece of crap. But, you know, the American people are complete idiots when it comes to elections, and they believe in this two-party system. And, you know, it'll never change it. And the government's got it, you know, the government's locked. And these bastards will always be in power unless there's a revolution. And Mr. Obama monitored returns to the White House, then telephoned Mr. Boehner and Senate Republican Leader Mitch McConnell in congratulation in a call that underscored the power shift. In the Senate, Republicans won at least six Senate seats now held by Democrats, and among them was Mr. Obama's old seat in Illinois. That was a slap in the ass. Okay, to Obama. What a slap in the face. Captured by a congressman, Representative Mark Kirk. But Democrats won the biggest single race, with Senator Majority Leader Harry Reid defeating Sharon Angle, a favorite of the Tea Party movement. And
Democrats also retained seats targeted by Republicans in West Virginia and California, where liberal incumbent Barbara Boxer defeated former Hewlett-Packard chief executive Carly Fiorina. Republicans needed to pick up 10 seats to take control of the 100-seat Senate. In the House, Republicans had a net gain of 57 seats and were leading in another 8 Democratic-held districts. That was more than the 40 needed to capture control. It also eclipsed the so-called revolution that claimed the House in 1994 during Bill Clinton's presidency, ending decades of Democratic control when the party won 52 seats. The Republican gains will complicate Mr. Obama's ability to enact his proposals during the last 2 years of his term and possibly force him to fight off attacks on health care legislation and other bills already signed into law. Democrats will lose the House after only 4 years, the shortest a party has held the lower chamber since Republicans kept it for just 2 years from 1953 to 55. The House has the power to raise revenue through taxes and control spending, to impeach officials and to elect the president in case of a deadlock. It can also hold hearings and investigations.
Used to stymie the Obama administration.
Mm-hmm. House Republican leader Mr. Boehner said, across the country right now we are witnessing a repudiation of Washington, a repudiation of big government, repudiation of politicians who refuse to listen to the people.
This is just a crock of crap. So this article is kind of boring, but it just kind of tells you what happened. But
Rand Paul.
Rand Paul won. We got so many boneheads that it's unbelievable. coming into office. And this is just pretty much what everything that we've heard.
Yeah, most of this was carried in the mainstream news.
Poor Governor Babe there, what's her name? The CEO of eBay. She's
Meg
just, former boss. She spent $140 million bucks of her own money and lost the campaign to Cherry Brown. But anyway, let's see. Democrats blame the policies of Republican George W. Bush for weak economy. And he did. Financial disaster. Let's see, is there anything more on this thing that's worth reading?
The video there.
Yeah, it's a whole bunch of idiots. If you've been in the United States, you're OD'd on this stuff. So it's like, let's go on
to something else.
Something new. Let's see. That might be interesting.
In the light of voluminous evidence that pioneering sexologist Alfred Kinsey and his associates were guilty not only of scientific fraud, but serious criminality, culminating this week with WND's expose of one victim of Kinsey's notorious child sexuality studies conducted by pedophile researchers, Indiana legislators are calling for the defunding of the Kinsey Institute, located on the campus of state-subsidized Indiana University. Boy. Cindy Ngo and Woody Burton emphasized that any effort to cut off the Kinsey Institute hinges on electing Republican majorities in the state legislature. I don't think the Kinsey Institute is a proper use of taxpayer money. Given the pressure that higher education is under now, I can't think of a better time to defund them, said No.
Burton has spearheaded efforts in the past to defund the Kinsey Institute, and the veteran legislator noted that gerrymandered districts have kept Democrats in power. The state legislature frustrating Republican attempts to bring Kinsey funding to a vote.
No, and Burton's assessment was echoed by an optimistic Micah Clark, executive director of the American Family Association of Indiana, who recently circulated an email to Indiana state legislatures requesting that money for the Kinsey Institute be blocked. After November, we'll have a good legislature that will listen. This is the kind of material our taxpayer dollars shouldn't be supporting, said Clark.
Last time I tried to defund them, the budget was $666,000, Burton told him. That number was quite a joke in the Indiana House. I went down to that place and toured it. It's just a pit. It's just a porno pit. They've got rooms there where they take the college students in and show them pornography and do things to them. It's just disgusting, and they sit there and try to tell you that it's just science. They perform sex, Burton explained. They have a room, and they send a girl in and insert a thing in her and measure her sexual stimulation. They have another room for boys, and they have displays of all the sex toys throughout history, and they act like that's okay. I said this is trash, and they resented my saying it.
Burton noted that much of the Kinsey collection of sexual paraphernalia and research files are not open to the public, not even to the state legislature who fund it. I was trying to get
a legislative order
to go and see that stuff. A video was sent to me about this guy on the Kinsey Institute board who said they have a system to set up to destroy the files immediately if anybody tries to get in to see it with a court order. Clark has long been a leader in social conservative efforts to cut off the Kinsey Institute state subsidies. We have battled with the Indiana's legislature for years to stop supplying money to Indiana Youth University for the Kinsey Institute, Clark told WND. The Kinsey Institute has shaped the policies of SIE CECUS and Planned Parenthood, and their version of sex education has now infiltrated our schools, Clark said. The other side wears that as a budget of honor. We view that as a budget of shame. Kinsey is a known child molester all over Indiana, Clark added. Clark believes the next year could be the year his efforts to shut down the Kinsey Institute could bear fruit, as he expects the Indiana legislature will mount an investigation of the Institute based on the new reporting on Kinsey's connections with pedophiles. That's disgusting.
Is that something?
Ugh.
Wouldn't surprise me, but
secret NASA transmissions.
Let's UFO ET transmissions.
Oh, let's listen to this.
Only a minute long. So I think it's about, is that an hour? It's an hour long.
Let's listen to a little bit of it.
Okay.
Paranormal TV.
No sound.
Since the dawn of time, man has cast an envious eye towards the heavens and speculated about what it may contain. After the past century, it has conducted an exhaustive yet still fruitless search for telltale signs of extraterrestrial life. But in the summer of 1999, a cable TV station manager in Vancouver, Canada, emerged from the shadows to lay claim to such a discovery. This video forms part of an ongoing and coordinated global effort to ensure full public disclosure.
I don't know what it is. That one was really impressive.
There are, on the other side of the coin, at least five proofs that the objects were not ice particles, therefore spacecraft. And they were either extraterrestrial or terrestrial, obviously.
The secret NASA transmission is a smoking gun.
We have an unidentified flying object.
Credible professionals and observers be ignored? Should intensive and documented interest shown in the UFO phenomena by every strand of the military and intelligence community be simply tossed aside? Should countless photographs and film footage taken of the phenomenon over the years be looked upon as worthless? Should radar tapes, which have recorded the phenomenon on 400 occasions, be deemed as flawed? Should Congress then pay lip service to NASA, the scientific community at large, and its military and intelligence chiefs? Or is it time that politicians began to address the most important issue of our time? Is man, as some would have us believe, a unique species to this universe? One that evolved over the eons to finally stand upright and walk this planet? One that was able, in the course of less than a century, to progress from horse-driven carriages to putting a man on the moon? How was this staggering technological progress achieved over such a short period of time? Is it pure coincidence, then, that midway through this period, reports of flying saucers began to emerge from around our world? At the precise moment when man was signaling his intentions to step forth from his earthbound environment, the phenomenon we now term UFOs signaled back. Throughout the documented history of those early pioneering manned missions into space, one can find numerous references, made by both astronauts and cosmonauts, to witnessing, and sometimes describing, curious anomalous objects seen while in orbit around the Earth. John Glenn likened these to fireflies, and for a time, NASA actually believed they had stumbled across living critters, according to one of its retired astronauts, Scott Carpenter. The years went by, and with each passing decade, there appeared no let-up in reports of UFO activity. But in the late 1980s, those reports took on far greater significance with the arrival of the camcorder. In the space of a few short years, what was once regarded as an extremely rare event, to capture a UFO on film, has now become commonplace. And while a sizable proportion of that video footage leaves most unimpressed, like the phenomena itself, a small residue of what remains can be termed impressive. In July 1991, millions of people throughout Mexico stared skywards to observe a solar eclipse. That day, several UFOs appeared in those same skies. Skeptics would later conclude that these were nothing more than planets or stars, but the video evidence, recorded independently at several different locations, suggested otherwise. Much has been said, written, and claimed as to why more UFOs have emerged from Mexico than any other nation on the planet during the 1990s. Indeed, there are those who would argue that most, if not all, of the 5,000-plus hours of amateur camcorder footage taken of UFOs in the skies above Mexico this past decade alone is nothing to write home about, that the bulk of the footage can easily be explained, that some has been deliberately manufactured, while the rest has captured nothing more than passing aircraft, balloons, meteors, closer to home.
It's just staying in the... It's just a lot of...
People might like to go to that and listen
yeah,
to it.
Yeah, you can check it out on YouTube. The secret NASA transmissions.
It might be something you might enjoy listening to. It's
yeah.
a two-hour thing.
Hour and a half,
so yeah.
Long enough. U.S. is to spend $200 million a day on Obama's Mumbai visit. Can you imagine that?
No.
The U.S. would be spending a whopping $200 million per day on Barack Obama's visit to the city. The huge amount of around $200 million would be spent on security, stay, and other aspects of the presidential visit. A top official of the Maharashtra government, privy to the arrangements for the high-profile visit, said about 3,000 people, including Secret Service agents, U.S. government officials, and journalists, would accompany the president. Why would we have to pick up the tab for these freaking journalists and everybody else? Several officials from the White House and U.S. security agencies are already here for the past 1 week with helicopters, a ship, and high-end security instruments.
Why does he have to go to Mumbai anyway?
I don't know. That's where they blew up that
hotel.
Yeah. I mean, what's the deal here? All right. The huge...
Except for personnel providing immediate security to the president, the U.S. officials may not be allowed to carry weapons. The state police is competent to take care of security measures, and they will be piloting the president's convoy, officials said, on condition of anonymity. Naval and Air Force have been asked by the state government to intensify patrolling along the Mumbai coastline and its airspace during Obama's stay. The city's airspace will be closed a half hour before the president's arrival for all aircraft, barring those carrying the U.S. delegation. The personnel from the SRPF Force 1, beside the NSG contingent stationed here, would be roped in for the president's security, the official said. The area from Hotel Taj, where Obama and his wife Michelle would stay, to Shakira helipad in Colaba would be cordoned off completely during the movement of the president.
The Hotel Taj was the one that he blew up.
Mm.
This doesn't make any damn sense at all. And, you know, but, yeah, even why they're even going there.
I think it's too dangerous.
Not too dangerous. It's not a danger. I mean, these things are all plotted by the U.S. CIA anyway.
Climate change hysteria fault is water is the new target.
I just saw something yesterday, too, that they named six cities that in the country that were
water shortage.
And
I have to be in the Midwest.
Midwest and West. And Arizona, you know, Phoenix and Tucson.
Self-proclaimed environmentalists and people who use the environment as a vehicle for political control, often the same people, have not quite destroyed environmentalism. They are running out of exotic scares as coral bleaching, ocean acidification, and a multitude of other claims proves unwarranted. A sign of desperation is the shift to the much larger targets, but they pose the problem that people know a little more, and a basic question raises immediate doubts. Water is their latest target. More and more stories about running out of water appear. Most are linked to the false claim by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change that droughts will increase in severity with global warming. It's illogical because higher temperatures means increased evaporation, more moisture in the air to create precipitation. But that doesn't stop them.
Some more of that. This is from Canada Free Press. Anyway. Sign of desperation is a shift. Did we read that? Yeah.
Yeah, we read this.
Global warming is illogical because we already read that, but that didn't stop them. Too many. causing environmental collapse. The real goal is total political control, the shutdown of industry, and ultimately elimination of people.
Mm.
What is not a problem? Water is not a problem. There is no shortage. As with climate and all the other issues used to panic people, there is lack of information and there is lack of information and understanding. I know from chairing public hearings on water how it raises passions. Water wars, rather, have been fought, and future conflicts are possible because of the unequal distribution, but none of this is necessary. Science incorrectly assumes that the oceans have remained essentially unchanged for 600 million years. The theory is that as the Earth cooled, the various elements settled out in layers according to their specific gravity. And water is used as the base with a specific gravity of 1. The error of the claim of constant volume is that every time a volcano erupts, more water vapor is released into the atmosphere, adding to the total. There is another contentious claim that water comes from space. The main discoverer of the cosmic snowstorm, Dr. Lewis Frank, whose initial hypothesis was ridiculed when he presented it in 1986, now says with great confidence that the terrestrial bombardment could easily have supplied all the planet's water and perhaps also many of the chemicals that are essential for life. If the flux has been similar over geologic time, says over 4 billion years, then it very closely accounts for the oceans we have now, including the ice caps. Dr. Frank,
A physicist at the University of Iowa said in an interview, evidence of water on the moon seems to support this theory.
And what they're not talking about is the comets. Comets are loaded with water,
mm-hmm.
Which is why they have these trails, you know, these comet
tails.
Which is the evaporating of water.
So there is no agreement on how water is on the planet. Measures of the amounts and distribution are also totally inadequate. Approximately 97% is salt water and 3% fresh water, and there is a constant movement between the two. And then they show, figure one shows the source of a pattern of, that doesn't make sense unless
you
can see it.
Well, solar energy strikes the surface in the tropics, and most of the energy is absorbed. But a portion is used to increase the rate of evaporation. The energy is not lost, but stored as latent energy in water vapor molecule. Most of this occurs in great cloud development called cumulonimbus.
Thunderstorm clouds. I think that's
easier
to say.
These are massive systems that the grid system of the computer model is so crude that they cannot be encompassed. The water vapor is transported and released back into the atmosphere when their condensation occurs. This is why temperatures rise when it rains or snows, and the energy is in all of its forms is carried up and distributed poleward, by upper level winds.
Global temperature data is grossly inadequate. Precipitation measures are even worse. The modern record is virtually non-existent, and the historic record worse. Consider this comment about Africa. One obvious problem is the lack of data. Africa's network of 1,152 weather watch stations, which provide real-time data and supply international climate archives, is just one-eighth the minimum density recommended by the World Meteorological Organization. Furthermore, the stations that do exist often fail to report. The quote is an article about trying to predict the critical monsoon in the Sahel region of Africa. Climate scientists cannot say what has delayed the monsoon this year or whether the delay is part of the larger trend. Nor do they fully understand the mechanisms that govern rainfall over the Sahel. Most frustrating, perhaps, is that their prognostic tools, computer simulations of future climate, disagree on what lies ahead. We're told that the science is settled because they want the public to believe it. A recent request for more data tells you that we know little about the oceans. They are a massive source of moisture and energy and critical for precipitation over the land. Scientists are urging governments around the world to invest in ocean-based systems that could provide warnings of droughts, floods, and other environmental disasters.
Trevor Platt, a marine biologist with a partnership for Observe Global Ocean, says the system of devices would cost up to $15 billion. Too much water, flooding, or too little drought are not adequately measured. No wonder the IPCC computer model predictions of the climate are wrong every single time. And water is very attractive to alarmists and those who seek bigger government because it is so fundamental to life. It is the one resource that essentially remains classified as a public good, which means it's easier for government to control. It's also why the World Bank is involved in large-scale water projects.
Mm-hmm.
That's that. So that's kind of interesting. So expect more of that crap to come. Water shortages.
Another police cover-up of a custody teen's death?
Yeah, I think that's in England.
Mm-hmm. Lou Rockwell shows Lee Harvey Oswald was a patsy.
Yeah, that's interesting. Former FBI Don Adams helped investigate the Kennedy assassination at the time and smelled a rat right away. But it was not until 1993 that he knew Oswald was set up by LBJ, Hoover, and other D.C. gang members. He has since dedicated his life to telling the truth about the coup d'etat. Let's see what he's come up with.
This is the Lou Rockwell Show. great to have as our guest this morning, Mr. Don Adams. Don was a longtime FBI agent. He joined the Bureau in 1962 and early on was investigating a guy who later perhaps was connected to the Kennedy assassination. Then he was assigned to the Dallas office, where he actually did help investigate the Kennedy assassination. He had some serious doubts. Don, I want you to tell us about your doubts and how they were confirmed years later by a book and what you've been dedicating your life to now.
Okay. Thank you, Lou. Let me begin by saying that I have three purposes that I'm doing this for. One is to prove that Oswald did not do any shooting and did not kill the president. The second thing is that I want to mention is that I want to surface the name of Joseph Adams Miltier, who played a very heavy role in the assassination, but I didn't learn about his role until in 1993 and 94. And then the third thing is that I want to say is that there were 11 shots fired in Dallas, which will shock a lot of people, but it's a true statement. I mean, I have studied this thing very carefully with all my years of experience in the military and so on, and so I make the statement that there were 11 shots fired in Dallas. Now, let me just give you a real quick introduction. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on Oswald because, like I said, I'm trying to remove him, but I will get into why I'm removing him from being a shooter. Joseph, I was working in Thomasville, Georgia in 1963. Around June, I started working there. In November, on the 13th of November, 63, I received a telephone call from the agent in charge, and he told me that they had received a request from the United States Secret Service for the FBI to conduct an investigation concerning one Joseph Adams Miltier, and that Miltier lived in Quitman, Georgia, which was in a town that was covered in my territory. We had 9 counties that we were responsible for in the southern portion of the state, which went from Dothan, Alabama, over to Savannah, Georgia. So I started my investigation. There was controversy with my boss right away because he restricted me and said that if you'd locate him, you do your background on him and that, but I want you to do it all by yourself. And I said, boss, I said, I'm brand new down here. This is all new territory to me. I need to work with somebody. I have a chief of police in Quitman that I worked with, fortunately, on a couple of cases. And I would like to have him join me and work with me. So as a result of that, he finally acquiesced, but it was quite some teeth pulling to get that done. I went over and I met Chief Bill Elliott. He and I did a full investigation on Miltier, got everything that we could possibly work up on him, and we were fortunate to find a set of fingerprints down in the basement of the Lowndes County Jail in Valdosta, Georgia, that was secreted in an old fingerprint file down there, which we went through and did a single fingerprint search and found this set of fingerprints for him, which is the best evidence that you have of who a person is. Once we acquired all that information, I then prepared a written report, which I was trained to do in training school and everything, and I did a written report and hand-carried that to Atlanta and gave it personally to the special agent in charge, because when there are threats to kill the president, and that's the investigation that you're conducting, to me, there's nothing more important that an agent can conduct in his entire time in the Bureau. The two threats that I investigated was the first one. There was a meeting that took place in Indianapolis, Indiana, and in that meeting, 4 people were present, and Miltier was one of them. And there was a man by the name of William Somerset, who was a boyhood friend of Miltier's. But in addition to that, he was also an informant for the Miami Intelligence Police Department and also for the FBI for 10 or 20 years prior to this happening, and Miltier did not know this. So based on that, the information was given to the Secret Service by Somerset, and then I was to conduct my investigation. The plan was to, the first plan, part of the plan was to killed President Kennedy as he left Homestead Air Force Base in Homestead, Florida. He would drive over to Collins Avenue on in northern part of Miami, and then travel up the highway, which at that time there was no buildings, there was no houses or anything, just nothing but palm trees lined the highway. And the plan was to secrete one of these four people who was willing to give his life to shoot the president because he hated him that badly, to climb and get up in and secrete himself in.
Yeah, I think this guy's full of shit, too. Yeah, what do you think?
Well, it kind of goes on and on.
The guy wants to kill the president. But it was. They already know who did it. This guy's wasting his life, you know, pinpointing some lunatic in Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they already, you know, this is, you know, I don't know. What a waste of time. What a waste of a life. Anyway, this is interesting here. Refuse this routine procedure or expose your baby's brain to severe damage or danger. Hepatitis B vaccine has been recommended by federal health officials since 1991 for all infants and children. There is now a hepatitis B vaccine mandate for children to attend daycare or school in 47 states. Did you know that?
No.
Despite strong evidence that the health risks of doing this outweighs the benefits for your child, three hepatitis B shots are part of the standard government-recommended childhood vaccination schedule, with the first dose given at 12 hours of age in a newborn nursery of most hospitals. Oh, my God.
Oh.
But the hepatitis B is a primarily blood-transmitted disease associated with risky lifestyle choices such as unprotected sex and multiple partners and intravenous drug use involving sharing needles. It's not primarily a children's disease. Right? And hang on a second. I'm going to go to this because this is fascinating. It's by Dr. Mercola. And Dr. Jane Orion of the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons so eloquently testified to Congress, with hepatitis B vaccine, the case of mandatory immunization with few exemptions, is far less pervasive than with smallpox or polio vaccines, which protected against highly lethal or disabling, relatively common and easily transmittable diseases. For most children, the risk of serious vaccine reaction may be 100 times greater than the risk of hepatitis B. There are more reports of serious adverse reactions in children than there are cases of childhood hepatitis B reported in America, and despite what you may hear in the media, reactions can be serious. Just this month, China Daily reported 44 children became sick and were taken to the hospital after receiving injections from a bad batch of hepatitis B vaccine. After examining the side effects of this vaccine, you might wonder if every batch is a bad batch. In 2008, French authorities launched a criminal investigation of two vaccine company managers from GlaxoSmithKline and Sanofi Pasteur for failing to disclose dangerous side effects of their hepatitis B vaccines. When babies die after Hep B vaccines, most of the time their deaths are automatically attributed to SIDS, or sudden infant death syndrome, without investigation into whether the vaccine caused the baby's death sudden death. When a baby's death is listed as SIDS, rarely does anyone ask about the deceased infant's vaccination history to find out whether there were symptoms of vaccine reactions before death. Hepatitis B vaccine as a contributing cause of sudden infant death can be automatically ruled out if a baby dies suddenly after getting a hepatitis B shot, especially if there are symptoms of a potential vaccine reaction before death, such as high-pitched screaming or prolonged crying for many hours or days, collapse, shock, pale skin, blue lips, unresponsiveness, excessive sleepiness, failure to feed, baby cannot be easily awakened, fever, diarrhea, or vomiting, hives, rashes, or swelling of the body, convulsions, jerking of fingers, hands, arms, legs, other serious change in mental, emotional, or physical behavior.
There are only...
Is your baby really a risk for hepatitis B?
There are only two primary circumstances in which your baby would be at significant risk for contracting hepatitis B, and both are quite rare in the U.S. If you are pregnant and a carrier for the hepatitis B virus, your baby could be at risk for infection during childbirth. However, you can easily find out if you are a hepatitis B positive by getting tested when you're pregnant. Your infant could be at risk for hepatitis B infection by receiving a blood transfusion using hepatitis B infected blood. In America, all blood products are required to receive proper screening for hepatitis B and other pathogens prior to use. There is no way to achieve 100% safety with blood transfusions, however. Universal hepatitis B vaccination might be a good idea if the vaccines gave lifelong immunity and were very safe, but they are not. Hepatitis B is a viral infection that affects your liver and spreads through direct contact with the body fluids, particularly blood and semen, of an infected person. The symptoms are similar to the flu: weakness, muscle and joint pain, loss of appetite, nausea, vomiting, low-grade fever, diarrhea, and in some cases a swollen liver and jaundice. In many cases...
Which is yellowing of your skin and eyes.
Yeah, well. In many cases, carriers of the hepatitis B virus exhibit few or no symptoms. Most infected people don't require hospital care, and the majority recover without complications and are left with natural lifelong immunity. I didn't know that. If the infection becomes chronic, however, it can be very serious. 20% of chronic cases eventually progress to liver damage and potentially even cancer, resulting in about 4,500 deaths annually in the U.S. There is some debate about the prevalence of hepatitis B in the American adults. As of 2005, there were 5,119 cases of hepatitis B reported in the U.S. However, U.S. authorities estimate more than 1 million Americans have chronic hepatitis B infections. Other authorities say true carriers of the virus represent less than 0.1% of the population in North America, Europe, and Australia, which amounts to about 300,000 people in the U.S. So the range seems to be somewhere between 300,000 people and 1.25 million people in the U.S. who are carriers of the hepatitis B virus.
According to the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, operating jointly by the CDC and FDA, there were 36,788 officially reported adverse reactions to hepatitis B vaccine between 1992 and 2005. Of these, 14,800 were serious enough to cause hospitalization, life-threatening health events, or permanent disabilities.
That's pretty scary.
Yeah, 781 people were reported to have died following the hepatitis B vaccination. Vaccine adverse events
are substantially underreported, some estimate by as much as 90%. Even though the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act of 1986 mandated that all doctors and other vaccine providers report serious health problems, including hospitalization, injuries, and death following vaccinations. The 1986 Act did not include sanctions for failing to report.
Providers did not file a report.
This is quite a long article.
But anyway, I would not get a list of conditions now linked with hepatitis B.
You might want to listen to this.
It's disturbingly long. What sort of reaction that people had to the hepatitis B vaccine? Common reactions include the following symptoms: fatigue, muscle weakness, fever, headache, irritability, and joint pain. But there have been reports of disabling neurological and immunological disorders that have developed following hepatitis B vaccines as well.
There are an array of serious health problems people have reported experienced after the Hep B vaccinations is quite shocking. Here they are: multiple sclerosis, Guillain-Barré syndrome, Bell's palsy, diabetes, rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, idiopathic thrombocytopenia purpura. I don't know what that is. Convulsions and brain disorders such as encephalitis and brain demyelination. I don't
brain
know.
Swelling.
Immune dysfunction, visual and hearing impairments, including optic neuritis and pancreatitis.
According to a study in the United Kingdom, hepatitis B vaccines may increase risk for developing multiple sclerosis, a factor of 3. Researchers discovered that people showed a threefold increase in the incidence of MS within 3 years of being vaccinated. They weren't able to determine if the vaccine triggers the disease in those already susceptible or if it speeds up the onset. In addition to MS, studies also reveal a link between hepatitis B vaccines and the development of type 1 diabetes.
That's all of that list.
Right.
That's all of
yeah,
it.
So it's amazing.
Your body's an easy target.
Your baby is an easy target.
Your baby is an easy target.
Hepatitis B immunity fades after just a few years. So this you know,
it's not worth
it's
it.
It's not worth it. Baby does not respond like you to vaccinations. How vaccines damage your infant's developing brain. I'm going to have you go to this. This is a this article is by Mercola.com, and refuse this routine procedure or expose your baby's brain to severe danger is the name of it. And
there's something on YouTube there. There's a little.
Yeah, well, there's quite a bit there, but you know, it's 6 minutes and 6 minutes. But I don't think we have to go to that. We're almost done the show anyway.
Okay.
I'd like to go to a couple more. But go to Mercola.com and check this one out. Very, very interesting. And there was something else here tonight. I wanted to... There we go. I want to read this. U.S. deploys 4 submarines in the Persian Gulf. Fourth submarine in the Persian Gulf. The United States has deployed its 4th submarine in the Persian Gulf regions following the deployment of 3 other near the Bahrain port. This comes as
Bahrain,
yeah, whatever. This comes as a USS Abraham Lincoln and French Charles de Gaulle aircraft carriers are headed toward the region. I have one follow-up article down here, too, that shows that if we go to war with Iran, we save the economy. A total of 30 combat vessels are currently deployed in the region, including those belonging to Britain and France. USS Abraham Lincoln aircraft carrier with 5,000 crew members, including sailors and pilots, have entered the territory of the U.S. 5th Fleet. Abraham Lincoln is accompanied by USS Cape St. George and battle cruisers, as well as 4 destroyers. I mean, we're really talking some serious bullshit here. But I wanted to go to this one because somewhere here I saw it. Former Marxist terrorist elected as Brazil's president.
Oh, nice.
There it is. Washington
Post. War with Iran would rescue economy.
Right. Washington Post political correspondent David Broder has kind words for President Obama in his opinion column Sunday, arguing that it isn't the president's fault the economy is stuck in reverse. With a 4-decade-plus veteran of Washington politics offers a startling solution to the president's political and economic woes. March off to war with Iran. The president, who is much smarter and more inspirational than any of his opponents, could benefit from a confrontation with Iran because it would strike up a war machine that would pull the U.S. out of economic stagnation. Yeah.
Yeah,
He writes that there are essentially 2 ways that an economy can be grown. Through the natural economic cycle and through war. We already have war.
We have two.
Two wars. And it's killing our economy.
Ugh.
And maybe this isn't even worth reading.
I don't think so.
Yeah. Not even worth reading. Moron. Well, I give credit to a moron.
That's right.
There was this one that I saw that I thought might be of interest. Right here. Thorium revolt. Mineral to replace uranium as nuclear power source.
Oh, let's see what that is.
Yeah.
In other news, an obscure metal that could energize our world. It's called thorium. It's eco-friendly, and there's lots of it, many scientists say. It could even replace uranium as a nuclear power source. But despite its potential, the metal is yet to gain a foothold in the market. RT's Laura Emmett explains why.
We all use energy, but at what cost? Energy security, why many modern wars are fought. The oil's running out, and there doesn't seem to be a viable alternative in sight. But unbeknownst to most, there's an energy source that's clean, green, and abundant all over the globe. Thorium's a nuclear fuel, and its supporters believe it'll change the world.
Conflicts that we see today based around energy could go away, and that these energy sources that I'm talking about, which don't emit carbon dioxide or greenhouse gases and don't produce dangerous waste, could enable us to have cleaner water, cleaner air, and less intrusion on our environment from energy production.
A ton of the silvery metal produces as much energy as 200 tons of uranium or 3.5 million tons of coal.
The amount of thorium that it would take to provide all the power to run your entire life is about the size of a marble that big.
A group working on thorium in the UK says it hasn't managed to get the British government on board so far, so it's looking to cooperate with countries like Russia. For several years now, a Russian physicist has been proposing to build thorium power stations, but ironically, his ideas haven't been taken up.
There's a lot of focus on renewables at the moment, so maybe that's where they feel that there's more public support for renewables rather than new nuclear builds. But I think if they truly understood the potential of thorium, then they would realise that it's a good investment.
Research on thorium was largely halted in the middle of the last century after a uranium-powered reactor was designed. Many believe thorium also fell out of the spotlight because making a bomb out of it is thought to be almost impossible. But today, not all scientists are thorium converts.
The thorium reactors don't really work. They're very challenging. It's a whole new fuel technology, which has considerable and very insurmountable problems, in my opinion. They would have problems in developing the processing cycle, the way in which you split the fuel from the waste from the reactor. They would have difficulties in actually storing the fuel.
In 2007, cities from London to Sydney have held Earth Hour, turning the lights off to save energy. Proponents say if thorium power became a reality, we could turn the lights back on with confidence.
Lights will guide you home.
Thorium's a divisive thing. Some say it's a technology that's been tried, tested, and found lacking. Others say that because the light water reactor got there first, thorium was never given a proper chance. But while it's cheap, abundant, and even a possibility, the scientists here at the annual Thorium Conference say, give it a go. It might even change the world. Laura Emmett, RT, London.
I think so.
That sounds like a really good thing. I hope we can they explore that more.
Unbelievable. Israeli bulldozes Gaza village.
Another one.
Accompanied by tanks, Israeli bulldozers have driven deep into the Gaza Strip before proceeding to flatten areas within a central town, says eyewitnesses. The intrusion took place on Monday when the vehicles advanced hundreds of meters into the agricultural town of Wadi Es Salka. The Man News Agency reported they then began to rove around and raise what lay before them on the ground. genocidal bastards. Israel conducted a self-proclaimed withdrawal from Gaza in 2005. The enclave it occupied along with other Palestinian territories in 67. However, Israeli forces have been carrying out regular daily forays into the Gaza Strip ever since
the so-called pullout. Tel Aviv says the assaults are meant to respond to prevent rocket attacks on Israel by Palestinian resistance fighters, although the homemade projectiles seldom leave any casualties or considerable damage to property. The Israeli military also targets Gaza's civilians in killing miners who search the areas of former Israeli settlements for collectible debris.
So it's just, you know, they're just killing them at random, you know.
Yeah.
They don't care. The U.S. seeks to up military role in Yemen.
U.S. brutally tortures Iranian women.
Yeah, that's interesting. An innocent Iranian woman held in the U.S. for about 3 years says that she's kept under horrible conditions and is subject to most physical and mental torture. I can't pronounce her name. Shahrazad Mir
Kolukahan was arrested U.S. in December of 2007. Her ex-husband, Mohammed Seif, had allegedly tried to export night vision goggles to Iran from Austria. She was sentenced to 5 years in prison by Florida federal court in his absence. Why would she be sentenced to prison?
I don't know. And Mir Olikahan told Press TV via telephone from inside prison on Monday that she was duped into visiting the U.S. by American authorities, who then tried to make her a spy and use her to find the whereabouts of her ex-husband. She said her conditions had grown much worse after Iran released American
National
Sarah Shore, who was charged with legally entering Iran and espionage on bail. I was taken to a federal prison camp in Miami after my arrest in December 2007, describing the Miami prison as a horrible place. I was mistreated horribly by all the correctional officers, and more especially by the higher level, the lieutenants, captains, and wardens. After I was sentenced a few months later, they transferred me to a federal correction institute in Danbury, that's Connecticut, where conditions were a little bit better. Mayor Colonna also said that U.S. media censorship regarding her case heightened after the release of Shored. Then last Saturday,
out of the blue, they came and put me in handcuffs and took me to special housing unit where the most horrible and dangerous of criminals are kept. She said U.S. authorities had kept her at the special housing unit for 6 days in a bid to have easy access to her legal paperwork. They put me in handcuffs. They took me to the prison, and they started to torture me in every possible way, especially mentally. They horribly tortured me mentally to become a spy and work for them and turn in my ex-husband, who is mother of two daughters, told Press TV. She said she wrote lots of letters to Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad during her imprisonment, asking him to file a suit against the U.S. government at the International Court of Justice. Also on Monday, her mother, Belgias Roshan, called on U.S. President Barack Obama to release her. It is difficult not to see your child for 3 years, especially for something which is not her fault. She has a very difficult time there, Roshan told Press TV. I wanted to ask Mr. Obama to release my daughter immediately. I want him to think about her two little daughters and their feelings, she said. Why would she be arrested? It was her ex-husband, for God's sakes.
This is part of what they do. You know, this is part of what they do. I don't know why they do it. They just do it, you know, because they can do it. You know what I mean? And it's about time it's over. IMF tax tribunals coming to America. You'll get so much things, so many problems.
David Icke is speaking in Los Angeles.
Yeah. I'm working on a David Icke website, by the way. If you want to check davidicke.com and his headlines, very, very good site and lots of good news. So that's the show tonight. and
good night, and have
a good
evening, and Leo will be talking to you tomorrow.
Yeah, we'll be on tomorrow, and we take you to the fourth dimension.
So, good night, folks.
Good night, everybody.